Chapter 9. Ulinor. Gorkogrod. I dared what others could not. I knew what awaited me in the inferno, and I stepped willingly into the flames. No other could. As above, so below, the fight without, and the battle within. Endless torment, unending perseverance. Not one of my brothers could have done it, in body or in mind. It was my agony alone to suffer. For what? For maggots to erupt from the corpse of greatness, devouring blindly the very thing that sustains them, consuming all until it is spent. The Imperium is a husk. Even the rot has eaten itself. The city was ringed with fire. Devastation caused by crashing ships and burning debris spread far into the wastelands that surrounded the Orc capital. Wastelands that had not been empty of life, but concealed a profusion of orcs beneath rock and ash. "Be thankful for small boons," said Vulcan. Thane looked from the Thunderhawk at the fires and wreckage. The Primarch spoke from the main compartment, making the already overfilled space even smaller with his bulk. 35 more Space Marines had managed to fit into a space intended for 30, even with the Primarch. Similarly laden, every drop pod, gunship, and shuttle on the Alcazar remembered had been dispatched within minutes of the first Orc attack. "Small boons, Lord Primarch?" asked the Fist's Exemplar Chapter Master. "Our fall from grace has killed no small number of orcs as well. Forgive me, my lord, for taking little comfort in that fact." Thane activated the powerful vox of the Thunderhawk to contact his battle barge. The signal was surprisingly clear when Shipmaster Waylon Kale responded. Evidently much of the vox clutter had been deliberately created by the orcs to mask their anti-orbit weapons. "Substantial damage, Chapter Master," Kale reported in response to Thane's inquiry. "But we have attained higher orbit. It seems that the initial attack was a massive drain on the power grid of Ulinor, and their targeting systems are having trouble tracking us at this distance."
"How much of the fleet has survived?"
asked the Lord Commander, sitting next to Thane.
"Half of the warships, barely any transports. We're also detecting increased activity from the Orc vessels in the system. It seems they will try to pick over the scraps. Admiral Akaria has taken command for the Imperial Navy. He assured me that they can cope with the void threat for the time being."
"Low orbit is out of the question," said Thane. "We cannot risk any more ships, even for the benefit of orbital firepower."
"Agreed," said Corland. "We have perhaps one more opportunity to strike with everything. We cannot waste it."
"You have a strategy, Lord Commander?"
Vulcan shifted his bulk and looked through the door into the command deck.
"I do, Lord Vulcan. What I said before still holds. We must attack as swiftly as possible. Our mission has become threefold. We must determine the exact location of the beast for an overwhelming concentration of force. We cannot be tricked into thinking a whole world is arrayed against us. It will take time for the orcs to mobilize any force of note from the other cities and move them to our battle zone. We must use what strength we can to break into Gorkogrod and destroy the great beast before we are overwhelmed. In order to do that, we must first disable the force fields and weapons protecting the city against orbital support. Also, we need to disrupt the gathering orc armies so that both of the previous objectives can be achieved before the massive weight of orc numbers can be brought to bear."
Vulcan nodded his approval.
"A sure course of action, Lord Commander. The warriors of the Adeptus Astartes must bear the brunt of the assault on the city. As much as it seems counter to your ethos, I would spare the chapters the brunt of the fighting before then." "I can think of several commanders that will not like the idea of holding back," said Corland.
"Beaumont, for one," said Thane. "And there will be others of similar thought. Those that supported his preemptive strike spring to mind."
"What happened was unavoidable,"
Corland replied, staring out of the canopy. Night was falling, the darkness lit by plasma fires and the occasional jade glow of defense beams and scarlet of missile trails, the sunset obscured by columns of black smoke.
"Whether today or tomorrow or the day after, we would have landed and the orcs would have revealed their intent. Perhaps the High Marshal's attack was not so rash. Had the orcs had time to prepare even further for our landings, we might not have had the period of relative grace we have now. There has been little sign of enemy movement on the ground to exploit our predicament.
Why? Said Vulcan.
The city must house thousands of orcs. Why has the great beast not unleashed its horde on our remnants before we can gather ourselves?
I feel that you know the answer to that already, Lord Vulcan, said Thane.
Corland shook his head.
The great beast does not need to strike. It knows that we come for it. We do not face a childish mind, but a calculating leader. It will let us bleed ourselves on the walls of its fortresses before it wipes the remains from the planet.
That fails to comfort me too, said Thane.
Which is why we cannot expend our best,
Corland said quietly, looking at Vulcan.
Dross and slaves may man the defences, but their guns will slay space marines as surely as they will combat servitors and Astra Militarum.
It is not the place of the Adeptus Astartes to hide behind the shields of others, said Thane, not believing the strategy his superiors discussed.
Nor shall they, said Vulcan. If Beaumont wishes to be the point of the spear, let him. Guardsmen and Scutari will not breach the city, but the Black Templars might. Lord Commander, I appreciate the sentiment, but you mistake the intent of my words. We cannot fight a war of attrition. We must trust to others to guard our backs while we turn every thought to piercing Gorkogrod.
Very well, Lord Primarch. The Astra Militarum and the Cult Mechanicus will provide the weight behind our shaft. The Adeptus Astartes shall dare the ire of the orcs.
Corlan spoke with certainty, but Thane could not tell if it was simply the habit of the commander or genuine confidence. As the Thunderhawk touched down among the broken and burning remains of the fleet, he felt no particular reason to be hopeful.
Let it not be said that we were found wanting when the Lord Commander called upon us.
Voxcasters across the war zone relayed the Field Legatus's words to his devastated, demoralized regiments. It was all he could do to summon the spirit to address them, ensconced just below the main turret of his new command vehicle, the Dawn's Ire, a Baneblade-class super-heavy tank. He considered the naming of the tank a good omen, but he knew there were those in his staff that thought otherwise. Of late, the legacy of the Imperial Fist's Primarch had suffered in reputation.
Our goal is clear, our resolve unbroken, he continued.
He looked at one of the displays carrying a visual from the external pict feeds. Ahead of the Baneblade, columns of tanks forced their way through the smashed remains of the city outskirts. Chimera infantry fighting vehicles carrying armored squads followed, ready to deploy their platoons in support of the battle tanks.
We are not to be the shield to the Space Marines. The rear guard that will allow them to be the blade that prizes open the defenses of the city so that all of us can bring the battle directly to the great beast.
Artillery batteries of hastily mustered multiple rocket launchers and self-propelled guns started to lay down a barrage of fire across the line of advance. Manticores launched their hail of missiles into the ruins, while basilisks pounded out shell after shell, flattening any building left standing by the rain of destruction that had fallen from orbit. Daring radioactive fire, companies from the Elran 4th Pioneer Corps had salvaged a trio of Death Strike launchers from their drop carriers, but Dor was conserving their deadly Vortex warheads for the time being. The bombardment was fierce, but nothing like the tempest of shell and rocket he might have hoped to unleash had his force landed intact. But big guns would not win this war. The initial reports from rocket and bombing attacks by Imperial Navy marauders suggested that the power shields protecting Gorkogrod would be as impervious to ground-based weapons as they were to aerial and orbital attacks. Such information had been paid for by the lives of the air crews, shot down by an iron ring of anti-air defences around the outskirts of the Orc City. Even this showed the depth of cunning of the great beast, having remained dormant long enough to allow the Adeptus Mechanicus flights to approach and to draw the attack of the Emperor's servants. As was almost universally true, it would require soldiers on the ground to force their way into the city.
That was the purpose of the Astra Militarum. Given how many had already died, it seemed likely that none of his brave Imperial Guard would leave Ullinor. A less experienced commander might have given his soldiers hope and allayed their fears. Dor knew better. He knew that any soldier of the Imperium worth the name, any true servant of the Emperor that had passed through the firestorm unleashed against them, cared nothing for survival now. Whether for themselves or worlds lost or dead comrades, the Astra Militarum would fight to punish the Orcs and give their lives in the effort. The Commissars reported barely any desertions, despite the disaster that had beset the landings. Dor was not surprised. Even for those of low resolve, where was there to run? The only option was to fight as hard as possible to survive. The majority of the foe came in savage mobs of infantry, emerging from massive fortifications of which the surface bastions and citadels had been but the tip of the iceberg. Hundreds of kilometers of city extended beneath the ash dunes. Much of it had been collapsed by fallen starships, but a maze of tunnels and chambers remained, populated by hordes of greenskins, ready to burst free almost anywhere. The main battle cannon of the Dawn's ire thundered into life, hurling its massive shell into a building flanking the line of advance. Its las cannon sub-turrets spat white flares while heavy bolter sponsons sent out an almost constant stream of fire at the alien brutes skulking in the ruins. The bulk of the army advanced on foot, keeping pace with the broadsided baneblades, stormblades, and other super-heavies. Lasguns strobed red beams through the clouds of dust and grit, while orc slug-throwers and energy weapons flared in reply. Scout teams in camouflaged fatigues surged ahead, their bayonets at the ready. Behind, smartly uniformed troopers advanced in rank beneath fluttering standards and imperial aquilas, defiant in the face of the orcs' weapons. Sentinel scout walkers stalked the ruins, their multi-lasers and autocannons picking out scattered groups of greenskins. In return, Xenos tank hunters sowed deadly anti-vehicle mines and lay in wait with short-ranged but powerful rocket launchers. Orc nobles, twice the size of any unaugmented human, led countercharges with blazing-headed axes and growling chain weapons. They led hundreds of orcs in bloody close assaults to cut down the servants of the Emperor by the score, before the fire of surviving guardsmen slew them or drove them back into their holes. Bulky-suited Deltronis fire teams, with heavy flamers, accompanied pairs of Hellhound flamethrower tanks, burning the greenskins from their lairs. In turn, they were supported by specialist tunnel fighters brought from the hive cities of Hermetica. These ex-hive gangers were barely civilized, regarded as savages by many of their fellow regiments, but in the close confines of the orc weapon sight tunnels, their barbarity was an advantage, matching the orcs for sheer viciousness, if not size and strength. Demolisher tanks and siege bombards advanced behind the outer cordon of Leman Russ tanks. Where the enemy massed in some bastion or bunker unbreached by the carpet bombing of the navy and the rolling barrage of the artillery, the wall breakers moved forward and unleashed their fortress-busting salvos. A whine of alarms brought Galtan and two subalterns into the chamber, ready to throw themselves on top of the field legatus. A few seconds passed, and then impacts rang on the Baneblade's hull, a pattering of detonations that spread from the engine blocks behind and passed directly along the entire tank. Galtan visibly flinched, eyeing the vaulting of the reinforced ceiling that held up the turret. "What was that?" asked one of the junior officers.
"Strafing run," said another.
"What happened to our anti-air guns? Where are those damned Navy interceptors?" Galtan moved towards the Vox panel, but Dor stopped him with a raised hand.
"They are protecting the squads on the tip of the attack, Lieutenant."
Dor shooed the staff officer away with a wave of his hand.
"A place far more suitable than guarding this armored behemoth, regardless of the rank of its crew. This is the closest you've been to a battle, isn't it, Galtan?"
"I have had the privilege of serving on the command staff of 3 general rank officers, Field Legatus."
"From a capital imperialis or an orbit, yes?"
Galtan swallowed hard and examined his fingernails.
"Yes, Field Legatus." "It is not an accusation," Dor assured him.
I am certain you served with distinction. I do not claim any particular experience at close quarters myself. I earned my rank in the artillery regiments of Alderaast. Even so, it is important that we keep calm, no matter how hot things get around us.
I understand, sir. I do have one suggestion, though, Lieutenant.
Sir, there will be a time when the fighting gets close and dirty, when perhaps you and I even are required to remember our basic training and fire a weapon in anger. When that time comes, assure me of one thing, Galtan.
Anything, sir. My dedication will not fail, nor my courage.
Dor pointed to the empty holster at the lieutenant's hip.
Remember to bring your las pistol.
The strategium and inner chambers of the Cortex Verdana had been constructed as an armored core, protected not only by a reinforced structure, but also an onion-like multi-layered field system. The central structure resembled the pyramid shape of the ship, but on a much smaller scale, barely 100 meters high, tilted at a sharp angle among a tattered cocoon of tangled cables, splintered walls, and ruptured bulkheads. It was perhaps only due to these additional measures that Magos Laurentis was alive to loiter amongst the wreck of the Warforge with the other upper hierarchy tech priests, while the bulk of the ship and its crew lay scattered and burning over several square kilometers of devastated Orc City. A cadre of several hundred Skitarii, the Dominus's personal guard, held a perimeter just half a kilometer from where Laurentis watched the unfolding battle. Beyond them, heavier engines of war waged their own fight. Two warlord titans of the Legio Ultima had landed close to the crash site, another likely reason for Laurentis's continued mortal existence. The towering avatars of the machine god's wrath put forth an ear-splitting, blinding storm of fire from their immense rocket launchers, volcano cannon, turbo lasers, and macro cannons, reducing clanking orc transports to careening piles of slag, obliterating mobs of aliens in blossoms of immolating fire. Smaller war machines held the other approaches. Moving between the fume-wreathed remains of the engine decks and the glassy crater that had been a plasma reactor, a Warhound scout class and two Reaver battle titans in the dark green and gold of the war griffins supported maniples of red-armored automaton warriors from the Legio Cybernetica. Any orcs cunning, persistent, or lucky enough to survive the ire of the titans were hunted down by hulking mechanical brutes, targeted by raging bursts from incendine combustors, or crushed with crackling power fists. Volkite blasts and the muzzle flash of macro stubbers added to the hellish glow of the flame-shrouded battle. Tracer rounds left actinic trails against a backdrop of the fading dusk, while incendiary missiles burst in blooms of incandescent wrath. The silhouette of a rare tri-legged Punisher-class Titan blocked out the sky above, standing guard over the upper ranks of Martian nobility, with Teslan accelerators gleaming. The containment fields of its underslung plasma annihilator vibrated through the ground and Laurentis's bionics like a heartbeat. Such protection did not render them immune to harm. Orc-heavy guns had started shelling the Cult Mechanicus forces as they had assembled on the site of their fallen commanders. Stray rockets continued to sputter and spit past, detonating against the black metal of the Warforge's inner sanctum. His recent near-fatal experiences had inured the Magos to any anxiety concerning self-preservation, but he sensed the unease of his companions. He had no doubt that they would have preferred to stay within the armored shell of the strategium block, but that was impossible. The glitter of las cutters and corona of phase fields illuminated the interior as a full recovery phalanx attempted to free the Dominus from the half-collapsed decks. Monotask servitors with cranes and heavy mechanical lifters pried apart the wreckage, red-robed tech priests overseeing the oddly brutal yet delicate operation. Delthrak's transmitter was a constant stream of coded orders, a rat-a-tat barrage of signals that flitted through a sub-channel of Laurentis's auditory backups.
"Please stop that. It is impossible to think with a racket," Laurentis told the barbarian's advocate. "I am trying to matriculate."
"Someone has to coordinate the defense while the Dominus is discommoded," replied Delthrak.
Laurentius could not see well after his most recent reconstruction, but from what he observed, there was nothing to be done that wasn't already underway. I would also suggest that you cease distracting our line commanders with this constant inanity, the Magos continued. They are far more experienced than you or I in these matters.
You have no rank here, Delphrax snapped back. In fact, you've become utterly irrelevant.
A particularly large and multicolored explosion to their right drew everybody's attention. Just a few hundred meters away, the red armored carapaces of several Cataphron warrior constructs stood out starkly against the white ash and gray dust. Their weapons chattered, muzzle flare visible even at this distance when they engaged another foe, as yet out of sight past the scraps of the Forge ship littering the blasted hillsides. Until large numbers of infantry arrived, there would be gaps in the defensive enclosure. Titans were more properly suited to leveling cities than picking off infantry assaults. A rocket whined overhead and crashed a few hundred meters away behind the tech priests. Another followed, striking closer. The deafening blast of a warhorn from the looming Punisher, the Modus Destructor, warned those below that it was moving. Skitari squads scattered, and the tech priests moved closer to the inner shell as the gigantic construct stepped forward. The shell of an orc building collapsed under its clawed foot as the Titan settled in its new position. Turning about its waist axis, the Modus Destructor brought its twin accelerators to bear on some target out of sight of Laurentius. A high-pitched wail split the air moments before the weapons lit up with a burst of azure light. Laurentius's inhuman sight picked up pulses of electromagnetic charge as a hail of hundreds of solid missiles flared into the darkness, shredding whatever engines or batteries had launched the rockets. The Magos caught a burst of vox traffic emanating from the innards of the broken strategium. Tech seers and servitors moved out of the structure, dragging twisted plates and carefully sliced support struts with them.
The Dominus has been freed, said Delphrak, decoding the data stream microseconds before Laurentius.
The barbarian's advocate's autosynapses had not endured the turmoil that had battered Laurentius since he had been dispatched to Adamantua. The cabal of ranking cult mechanicus huddled together as they approached the broad docking doors that had been freed by the work teams. Sputtering temporary lights lit the insides of the bay, casting an inconsistent crimson and amber gleam. The deck floor shuddered, settling under a fresh weight, the crash of metal reverberating from an open hold. A large shadow eclipsed the internal light. A second later, Dominus Zokuf strode into view. His technopic casing was hidden from view, located somewhere in the depths of the plates of armorplast, ceramite, and plasteel. Twice as tall as a Space Marine dreadnought, the Dominus's war body hunched on dog legs. Two Volkite cannons flanked the central coffin housing Zokuv's physical remains. Beneath this sarcophagus, field-sheathed power saws extended and articulated arms. A tangle of mechadendrites curled from under the carapace plates, tipped with a variety of appendages for fine motor work. The sparkle of an omnidirectional power shield caused the air to sputter with ionized particles, forcing the tech priests back several paces as the giant walker emerged into the night. Two eye-like search lamps sprang into life, bathing the assembled cult mechanicus with multispectral light.
Praise the machine god!
Laurentius joined in with a hailed chorus, feeling an uncharacteristic surge of relief at the sight of the cult mechanicus commander. He reasoned it was simply the cessation of Delphrax's chatter that had ended his discomfort. A burst of high-velocity data speared into Laurentius's cortical analysis cells, apprising him of the entire strategic situation in less than 2 seconds. Zokuv had not been idle during his enforced absence, having assimilated the data feeds of the remaining Adeptus Mechanicus assets and interfaced with the strategic and tactical systems of the Imperial Navy, Adeptus Astartes, and Astra Militarum. It included every last detail until moments before his emergence, down to the level of individual squad or specs readings detected by the massive auger arrays of the Warforge. It was too much for Laurentius to comprehend as raw data. His afflicted brain instead summarized the mass of information in vaguely visual terms. A ring of green around the red runes of the Adeptus Mechanicus
while a black thunderbolt speared towards the Orc city, followed by a blue shield.
"The plan is simple, my learned companions," the Dominus boomed through his address systems. "The Space Marines will seize approaches into the city interior. The Astra Militarum will hold the ground they take and shield them against counterattack from the rear and flanks. Our task, blessed be the Omnisire, is to locate and disable the anti-bombardment shield and anti-orbital weapons protecting Gorkogrod."
"Would it not be better to spearhead the attack with our Titans?"
suggested Delphrak. Laurentius could not tell if he was simply fulfilling his role or expressing personal doubts. In reply, the Dominus remotely opened a specific data packet in the cogitators of his minions. Laurentius reeled as the contents of the packet unfurled through his thoughts.
"Analysis of the Orc Brute Shield," said Zokuv. "It combines the same energetic and gravitational properties as many of the grand weapons we have encountered previously and those that assailed us in orbit, but utilized in a different fashion. Any void shield or power field we possess that contacts the Orc Brute Shield will detonate. We cannot send our engines through it with their fields deployed, and to do so without would see them destroyed in minutes by the Orcs within."
"What if we cannot destroy the shield, Dominus?" asked Delthrak.
"There is no retreat, no possible evacuation under present conditions. The Omnisire will curse our existence, and our infantry and vehicles will be forced to assault without Titan and orbital support."
"They will die," said Laurentius.
"Yes, they will. Which is why we must not fail. Mars demands success, even at the cost of our lives."
Laurentius turned his attention from the Dominus and focused on the mountain of lights that detonated the distant Orc city, shimmering as though behind a heat haze. Lit from within by innumerable lamps and fires studded with cannon-encrusted pinnacles and towers, Gorkogrod looked like a massive, squatting beast.